Gang, I've been talking about True Hemp Science Full Spectrum CBD Oils and how they've reduced my anxiety and helped me get better sleep for the last few months. I've also talked about the Full Spectrum CBD Balms that relieved my hand pain and made playing guitar and piano much easier. Well, today, gang, I'm going to tell you about True Hemp Science Organic Gummies made with Full Spectrum Hemp Oil. These delicious organic vegan gummies contain 50 milligrams of CBD and 1.5 milligrams of THC per serving. I had the black cherry flavor, and they are totally delicious. As I said, gang, I got great sleep. I felt totally relaxed. These things are absolutely fantastic. Get over to truehempscience.com and order yours today and start feeling more relaxed and sleeping better today. Now, gang, How Did I Get Here is partnered with True Hemp Science to bring you a very special gift. Use code HDIGH at checkout, and with your purchase of $65 or over, get 296 milligrams of the number 81 distillate oil, which is great for rest and relaxation and sleep. Well, I told you about this one from the very beginning. That's right, gang. Go to truehempscience.com/HDIGH. Order some of these gummies. Get it going. Also, if you live in Austin, you can find them at their brick and mortar store in Austin at the corner of South First and Mary, right by the Soup Peddler. That's truehempscience.com. Get in there. Get more relaxed. Feel better. Get better sleep with True Hemp Science. Let's get down.
Did I get here? And now here is your host, Tommy Naughty.
When we talked.
All right, hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys are all having a good week. Maybe you have a short work week due to that holiday on Monday. I'm not even going to talk about anymore because, you know, we're all feeling that way. That shooting on 4th of July in Highland Park, Illinois, that guy, a kid getting a gun, parents signed him for the gun after he had threatened their lives and his, and the police had come up. Just like all of the things, it's just like, you know, you can put as many laws in place as you want, but that one was definitely would have been circumvented by those parents. What is going on, man? Who are these people? God damn, you guys. Yesterday, I was at the dog park with Rosie before I went to rehearsal. Go wear her out. Go let her play with some people. Play with some other dogs. That's what I thought I should do. And I picked up a stick, and this has happened a few times, but this time it happened really bad. I picked up a stick that she was playing with, and I was kind of getting her ready to go. And I was turning around to walk away, and I had the stick in my hand. She jumped up to get the stick and bit my finger, like my middle finger on my right hand that I use to play keyboards for everything, right? Right at the tip where the finger where I hit the keyboard. And so I ended up not going to rehearsal. My finger was bleeding. I went to the urgent care thing. Didn't need stitches, but it hurts. Anyway, so to make matters worse, I have this big scratch on my face now. I do. I have a scratch on my face because I was playing with Rosie in bed last night and she jumped on my face and scratched it with her nail. Now, she doesn't mean to do this stuff, but she made me bleed a lot yesterday from the face. I was bleeding from the face from my dog. So if any of you guys have any like constructive sort of like playtime, she's a very rambunctious. She likes to wrestle. She likes to play tug of war. She likes to jump on and off of things and jump on you when you have something. I'm trying to figure out how to do that stuff. She's been doing really, really well with all of her new behavioral adjustments. She's adapted to them very well. I don't even take the spray can anymore when we walk. She's doing great. I'm really lucky. I'm a lucky guy, right, to have this dog. But the jumping thing and the biting when you're playing, how do you fix that? If you're out there and you know what you're talking about, write me. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. I'm Johnny Gowdy at gmail.com. And hey, gang, listen, while I'm telling you my email address, just telling everyone out there, you can email me. That's fine. At johnnygowdy@gmail.com. Let me know what you're doing with your dog. Gang, while you're out there checking out stuff on the internet, checking out today's band, A Fragile Tomorrow, maybe you're a new person coming to listen to the show because you're a fan of A Fragile Tomorrow. Welcome to the show. I'm Johnny. I'm a musician. I live in Austin, and I started this podcast in 2011, in August of 2011. And I've put out, this is episode 1,182. I'm very proud of that. I can't believe I've been doing it so long. I've been dropping 2, 3, 5 shows a week. Normally it's 2 shows a week. This week it's 3. Sorry, not 5. It's been a lot of shows, man. Go back and check them out. I've got great conversations with tons of great people. Everyone from like Styx to Adrian Quesada, whose new record is shooting up the charts while Black Pumas are on tour in Europe. Ray Wiley Hubbard. I did say Styx. I'm not joking. I just had G Love on. He'll be on the show on Tuesday. Fantastic conversation. Eric Johnson, Ray Wiley Hubbard, Bob Schneider. Many conversations with Bob Schneider. So anyway, yeah, and I've actually had a lot of Empress people on here. Anyway, so that's what the show is for those new people. Sorry, I'm just like naming things. But I want to let you know that you can subscribe and follow this podcast and rate the podcast. Please do that for us. It helps us out in every way. If you're listening to us on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, on TuneIn, on Overcast, on Stitcher, subscribe, follow us, leave us a rating. Let us know how we're doing. If you really like the show, you can follow us on Facebook at How Did I Get Here, or you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter. I am at Johnny Gaudie, JohnnyGaudie. And share the show on there. Tag me in it. I'll thank you publicly. All right? Subscribe to the show, listen to the show, share the show. That's all I'm saying. Gang, I have a great show for you today. Sean Kelly, singer, songwriter, and guitar player for the band A Fragile Tomorrow, is my guest on the show today. Now, Fragile Tomorrow is kind of scattered throughout America right now. Got guys in Georgia, South Carolina, and New York State. Sean is in South Carolina, I believe that's right. They have a brand new record dropping next week. It's called It's Better That Way. It comes out July 15th on Empress Records. It was co-produced by the band and Peter Holsapple, whose work with REM and Hootie and the Blowfish, everybody knows. Great conversation with Sean Kelly. This started out as like a family band, and two of his brothers also were in the band, but one of the brothers, Dominic, has left. He contributed to this record, but he's now gone to the band to pursue a career in political activism. These guys are really, really, really heavy story, too. Sean was born triplets. They all have cerebral palsy, but one of the brothers died when they were young from that. So he's learned to deal with a lot of stuff, you know, and he deals with it in his music. Like you'll hear this song, All Signs to Amsterdam, which is a song that's out now as a single from this record, It's Better That Way. That deals with him coming to terms with his anorexia and having to deal with all these problems being on stage and having stage fright and all this stuff. But at the same time, like, he's got this great relationship with all these amazing artists. Like, he actually played with Susan Cowsill, with the Continental Drifters, who also features Peter Holsapple and Vicky Peterson from the Bengals, who also makes an appearance on this record. She's on the song Fraying Wire, which I think might be out now, because that's one of the singles that's on the list. Anyway, Sean and I have an incredible conversation. He's a really sweet dude. He's a really talented songwriter. And I think of A Fragile Tomorrow, like, I'd heard the name before, but I'd never heard their music. And getting into this record, I started going back and listening to their stuff. They're really an incredible, like, art rock band. He's worked with the Indigo Girls. He's worked with, they've toured with Matthew Sweet, with the Indigo Girls, all kinds of people. And also the Continental Drifters, that band with Peter Holsapple, Vicky Peterson from the Bengals, and Susan Cowsill. Sean is actually writing a book about it. We talk about that. It's just such an interesting cat. And this record, It's Better That Way, fucking great record. Get out there and check it out. July 15th, it drops. There's a number of singles out right now. Lost in Art, All Signs Lead, All Signs to Amsterdam. Sorry, I keep on throwing lead in there. All Signs to Amsterdam, which I'll play. Super Bowl, and I think Fraying Wire is out. So anyway, without further ado, I really did have a great time getting to know Sean. He's a really fascinating guy, really sweet guy, and really interesting, and I think we got along really, really well. All right, so from the band A Fragile Tomorrow, this is my conversation with singer, guitar player, songwriter, Sean Kelly. Let's get down.
Feeling the
How are you, man?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for doing the show. I've been going through your music, and especially this new record is amazing.
Thank you so much.
Amazing, and I know you guys have gone through some serious changes and whatnot. I mean, I can only imagine because you're like this band. You started this band with your brothers, right? Or you started it with one of your brothers, but then the other brother joined.
Both. Well, we started the three of us. I guess it was 2003. So I was like 11. I was like 12. I just turned 12. When we started, maybe I was going on 12. It was September of 2003. So I was 11, going on 12 when I wrote my first song, and the band just kind of started from there.
So you started out doing original music.
Yeah. It's because I wrote a song and I didn't have any friends who played music.
Oh, for two questions about that song. What was it called?
Oh, I don't remember at all.
Do you remember what it was about?
Yes. It would have been about my triple brother, Paul, who passed away when we were six. And so I wrote a song about him, and it was a very like 12-year-old, very simple song, but it was enough to want to start a band over, I guess. But the name of it completely escapes me.
So as a songwriter, then you started out working your shit out in music.
Yes.
You were 6 years old when you lost your brother?
Yeah. 6 years old. Actually 5 going on 6. So it was the day before we started kindergarten.
Your twin brother.
And triplets. So triplets. My brother Dom, who was in the band until last year, he and I are triplets. So then we have a younger brother, Brendan. But Paul was our triple brother. And we were about to start kindergarten. And the three of us have cerebral palsy. So varying degrees of cerebral palsy. So Paul was in a wheelchair and was like essentially nonverbal for all intents and purposes. Like he was starting to sort of communicate a little bit, but largely almost nonverbal by that point. And he got sick overnight. He had like nurses and aides that would come to the house and help him. They checked his lungs the day before because I believe him and Dom are both sick, and his lungs were clear and everything. And then overnight he was sick, but he couldn't, you know, he was having trouble breathing or anything. He couldn't get up and communicate or walk to my parents' room or anything like that. So he came down with pneumonia very suddenly, and that's what took him. And apparently it's quite common for people with CP or children with CP to get quite severe pneumonia. And it's something I actually learned fairly recently and everything sort of made clicked, but that is apparently the case. And so he died the day before kindergarten started. And the crazy thing about that is my mom had fought very hard to get him into regular ed classes.
Right.
Rather than special ed classes, because he was physically disabled, but you know, his IQ was higher than mine and Dom's. And he was like using a computer with a head stick when he was like 3 years old.
Wow.
And so my mom fought her ass off to try and get him in regular ed classes. But he was approved for that and was just about to start kindergarten. And we had just moved into a new house the week before he died. My parents had a house built and it was wheelchair accessible and all this stuff. And then he died a week later. So it was like it was huge, huge life changing. Yeah.
So young too.
Yeah.
I can only imagine that that brought your family like really close together.
It did. And I think that's what started what started music, you know, kind of taking off for us, because I mean, we just, that's all we did was sit around and listen to music, you know, that's how we coped with things. That's what we did when Paulie was around. You know?
I lost my mom when I was a teenager, and there's a couple of records, and one of them in specific is Tears for Fears, song from the big songs from the mm-hmm. Big Chair, which had come out that summer. There was something about it. Obviously, they were also working out their personal shit. Do you remember any particular album or song that you kind of clung to at that moment for sanity?
Yeah, well, I was, so at that point, like, to put a long story short, the first band that I ever really listened to was Hootie and the Blowfish, because that Cracked Review album came out and everybody had it, so my parents got it, and Paulie loved that record. We used to listen to it all the time, and those guys are now, like, you know, friends of mine and stuff, and as the years have gone on, that's yeah, it's crazy. But that's where all the connections started for me. So, like, they were, when I was really young, they were my favorite band, and then as I got older, my tastes kind of changed and stuff. I love those guys, but, like, they're probably not a direct influence on us musically, but, like, they were at the onset for sure of all that stuff. And what they really did for me was, like, introduce me to REM and stuff, because they were, like, avid REM fans.
Right, right.
So that from there, it just kind of, you know, spilled over. I think when Paulie died, I don't know if there were, like, there were probably, I was listening to, like, you know, Out of Time era REM stuff, which my aunt gave me on cassette. So that's always kind of there's kind of an association there. Really, as I got older, a little bit older, is when I started just becoming obsessed with records. And so I think probably at the time I was still sort of in Hootie mode, and then a little bit of REM. And then it was really when I was like 7 or 8, like, things kind of exploded for me and everything just went crazy musically.
Yeah. This new record, I mean, not to pull forward from that time, because I do want to go back and figure out what your journey is, because this new record doesn't, like, you can't, there's no Hootie going on except for, I guess, Peter's involvement. You know what
right.
I mean? Like, it's very far sure. away from that. And there's a thing I read where you talked about that you think you're an art rock band, which I do too. Like, I totally hear
Thanks.
That. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, well, because I think when we discovered what we did, what I thought we did well, and kind of, like, clung to it, I think at that point we were into a lot of different other stuff. So, like, I always say, like, we wouldn't be a band without Hootie, because they were sort of the springboard for discovery. Really?
Right. Right.
But as far as direct influences go, I mean, they never really have been. I would say, especially, like, when we started getting older and making, like, real records, the first couple records we made are, I would say the first record, at least, is a little bit more like a glorified demo, really, because we were, like, 13 or 14. And then thank God it's not on the internet anywhere anymore or anything, because it's pretty bad. But, but, like, by the time we made our second record, like, we did that record with Malcolm Byrne,
Jesus.
Most people probably know. Yeah.
Yeah.
From, like, the Emilio Harris stuff. And
yeah.
Stuff like that. And that was one of those things where he reached out to us and was like, my wife found you guys on MySpace and I think you're great and I want to make a record with you. And I was like, holy shit, that's Malcolm Byrne. So we started doing that record. I think that's when we started, like, kind of expanding a little bit. I was just trying to be REM. That was the only band that really mattered to me. And then we kind of got into other stuff, but, like, it was, for the first few years, was really just REM. And yeah, now, I mean, it's all different kinds of things. I mean, this record is, there's some Wilco stuff happening. There's Bowie is a constant influence.
Yeah.
We listen to a lot of hip hop, me and Brendan. So there's always kind of a hip hop influence or a little bit of an undercurrent happening. But yeah, it's been a very gradual, journey to get to the sort of the art rock thing, which I think is just a good term for what we do.
Sure. Let me ask you a question. Cause, getting to this record, I know Dom is on the record on some of the stuff, but what, they're obviously with the three of you guys in this band together for so long. what directly can you address that changed? Well, like when he left, like, did you have to be more of a writer? Did you like what all changed for you?
I think the stuff that didn't change that made us feel okay about it was actually the writing and stuff, because at that point, by that point, me and Brendan were co-writing everything. Up until then, I was the primary songwriter until our last record previous to the new one. It was me as the primary songwriter for no other reason other than it's just what it was. And Brendan and Dom would bring in ideas, you know, here and there, but for the most part, it was me. And Sean Rhodes, our bass player, bringing some ideas. But the biggest change that I think made it difficult was, like, he was a drummer for many years, and then he'd already moved over to keyboards because he kind of was, like, losing interest in drums. And stylistically, on our last album, we were kind of moving in this direction that I don't think he felt like he could sort of do that sort of thing. You know, it's a very groove-oriented sort of record.
Right.
And so we brought in a new drummer, and he moved to keyboards. And so when he left the band, we'd started doing all this stuff, like, that was... The ideas we had were more rooted in, like, Wurlitzers and Hammond organs and things like that, as opposed to the last record being a synth record, really.
Right.
And so it was sort of like, oh, so what do? Because it's either, like, you know, he would tell you he's not like the most proficient keyboard player in terms of he's not, you know, it's not his primary instrument, but he's really took to it and loved it.
Right.
But like, I think we just were like, well, if either we could continue to fake it, like, not that he was faking it, but we could fake it, you know, like we could do like little, you know, one or two note stuff and just stack a bunch of things and make it sound like a real Wurlitzer part, make it sound halfway like we knew what we were doing, or we could just bring somebody else in. And so it took a while to sort of figure out the right way forward. And yeah, there was like a good 3 or 4 songs that had him on it from sessions that we'd started when he left the band. And it was like, all right, well, we don't have to do much with those, or we can leave some of his stuff in. And then the other part of it was he was writing actually some on this record. So that was a little bit of a roadblock, because there was an intentional thing on his part of writing more. So we kind of decided at that point actually to like throw half the record away and kind of start over on a lot of it, because we just were like, well, we have this opportunity. It was really hard. I mean, there was times where I didn't think we'd get the record done, because I was like, what are we going to do? And that's when we brought Peter Holsapple in, because it's one of those things like, all right, we just got to forge through and just see this thing through and make it happen. And Peter's like, there's no better person to help you do that. So we figured it out, but it was challenging for a minute.
I bet. And I bet personally too, like, you know, there's, I'm sure that the bond that you three had makes it a little awkward to take another, you know what I mean? To keep moving forward without one of the main pieces in your life, you know?
I think so. I think it had come to a place where like we didn't tour that much for the last record because of a whole different number of factors. Like I, you know, had a daughter and stuff. And so like my daughter was born like right after our last record came out. And just like Brendan had moved back up to New York. And so we're all scattered. And so we did very minimal touring for the last record. And Dom was not a part of a lot of that, just for all different kinds of reasons. And so we'd already kind of been drifting a little bit on kind of a professional level. And it was weird because we just had spent our entire lives building this thing together.
Yeah.
And it was weird dynamic. It wasn't weird having Josh play drums, like looking back and seeing Josh play drums, Josh Keane, because he and I had been playing together in other bands for X number of years at that point, and we were all like best friends. But just not having Dom on stage was very strange.
Right.
And then, yeah, going into this record, like when he left, all of a sudden we're making this record, trying to figure out what the band is without the three brothers and their two friends, pretty much, you know, always a thing.
Yeah.
And we figured it out, but it just took a minute to navigate all that. It was very weird. Luckily there was no, it was just like one of those things. Like we've talked about it for years, because the truth is, like, none of us make any money doing this. So it's like if it ever gets to the point where, like, you want to do other things, or like it's not fun anymore, like, who gives a shit? Like, it's all good. We're literally family. So it doesn't matter, you know, like, it's not going to do anything or make anything weird. So that was the conversation with Dom. Was like, he just got so, he was finding this other path, and it was taking up so much of his time that it was literally like, when can I possibly go to a recording studio and work on this stuff?
And that, and sorry to interrupt you, but that path is political activism.
Yes.
It's very, like, good. Thank you for, I mean, we could probably use less band dudes, less keyboard, drummers turn keyboard players, than we do need people out there healing this fucking country that's falling apart.
Oh my God, for sure. Yeah. No, I mean, it's absolutely is the right path for him. And he's just killing it. Like, it's crazy.
What is he doing?
So he is working for the Abrams campaign here in Georgia for Governor Stacey Abrams.
Awesome.
Yeah. So he's everywhere all the time. He's doing an event here next week.
And you're in Georgia. You're in Savannah?
Savannah. Yeah. Yeah. He's coming here next week, actually, for an event. So he's just out there, like, doing it. What? And it's crazy.
There seems to be not just that. I was reading the, it's a really cool thing that you kind of wrote a little, like, behind the songs of all the songs that went out with your publicity packet, which was, you know, to me, cool as fuck. This is going to come out, I think, before the record. So I kind of would only want to touch on a couple songs that people can actually go hear.
Right.
But there was a song called Fraying Wire that's going to be a single, right? Or is it already out?
Yeah. It'll be out, I believe, July 8th. So.
Yeah. So around the time that this comes out. But that one was written in direct response to the January 6th. Like, you wrote it within hours of it happening, right? Or a day or two.
Yeah, I think like the next day or something. Yeah. That I'm really proud of that song. That it was like one of those things, like, I had just gotten a Jaguar, a Fender Jaguar.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that. I love the Jaguar.
And that's the sound of that song is a Jaguar. But I just put in some open tuning, because that's just kind of how I write now. And,
yeah.
I was just kind of messing around with that main progression, and my daughter was like kind of bouncing along with it, and I was like, oh, that's kind of a good sign. So I started kind of messing with it, and that was well before January 6th that I started musically. And then right after that, I was just like, just watching. I mean, like, I couldn't work that day and stuff. Like, I was like, I remember just sitting at my computer just being like, what the fuck is going on, you know? And like, so I couldn't stop thinking about it after, like, everybody, you know, it's just like, this is insane. And I was thinking about just not just the fact that it was bonkers and horrifying, but also, like, you know, I read a lot about, you know, I'm like, you might glean this from my lyrics, but I'm very, like, into, you know, socialism, basically, and you know, these countries that have proven to do it well, and these historical figures,
right?
You know, like Eugene Debs and people like that. So I was thinking about, like, that sort of stuff. I'm really into, like, Pete Seeger and Phil Ochs and people like those kind of songwriters,
like
that
the
write
real
very
folk,
politically.
Folk guys, like the guys that were out there trying to make a difference with their guitar and voice.
Exactly. So I'm like, yeah. So I write a lot about, like, pro union stuff and stuff. So, like, I was thinking about, like, you know, these people like Joe Hill and these figures that, like, were actually fighting for real, radically positive change, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And, like, our family's from Ireland. So I was thinking a lot about, like, figures from the 60s and 70s during the Troubles and stuff like that. And I look at the news, and I'm like, looking at these like crazy people in fur, you know, head garments and things. I'm like, these are the like the rebels, you know, that we, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I was just like, this is fucking crazy. Yeah. I'm like, where, like, I mean, there's so many things to be fighting for that are worthwhile, that actually not just that are actually real and not just bullshit, but also just like, just real worthwhile things to be fighting for in this country, you know, like, just, you know, equality, equity, you know, all, like, I could go on and on, but, like, I'm just like, this is the stuff. These are the people. Like, these are the rebels of this country. Yeah. It's insane to me. It's embarrassing. So that's where that came from. It's just like kind of me sort of like lamenting, like, man, this is like, we have really, as a country, we've just, this is a low, low point for sure.
Where did that totally, it totally did. Where did that sort of, some people are passive about these things, right? Some people let them go by. Some people musically deal with their own internal struggles more than they do with what's happening societally, right?
Yeah.
And we can all be lazy and complacent, especially here, because we can find so many ways to distract ourselves to not really deal with the thing, just kind of like comment on somebody's Facebook thing, like, oh, you're a dick, or whatever, you know, whatever people do.
Yeah.
But where did this activism come to you and your brother? Was it like your parents?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, my mom mostly. Yeah. No, actually, that was all me. I mean, that's just been a gradual thing for me. That's just a whole another thing. But like, just the idea of like being forthright and straightforward about this stuff. I've talked about this a little bit before, but there was a point several years ago. So my mom passed away in 2017.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And I just remember, thank you. I just remember like, so she was sick for a really long time. She had cancer and for about 10 years. And, you know, at that point, like, prior to our last record, I wasn't writing a lot politically. I made a solo record in 2017 that was kind of like a Peter Gabriel, Kate Bush kind of Roxy Music 80s record. And there's a song on that record about Trump. And that was kind of the first time that I was like, okay, this feels pretty good, you know? And around the same time, me and Brendan had this little like hardcore punk side thing that we did.
Yeah.
It was also political.
Yeah.
So I was like kind of getting my feet wet a little bit with that. And I remember my mom, something happened and we were arguing with somebody, family or something at a gathering. And I didn't engage, you know, cause I was just like, I'm so fucking tired of this, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it was about, you know, just police brutality and stuff like that. And our father was a police officer in New York for 30 years. But he is like probably as far on the other end of the spectrum in terms of his views on this sort of thing that most probably police officers are. So we have these very abolish the police kinds of views or whatever. And we're having this argument and I'm just not really engaging in it at all. Cause I'm just like so exhausted by it.
Yeah.
I just remember her coming up to me afterwards and being like, I'm really disappointed in you for not speaking up. And she was like a little bit more protective on the police issue because she's married to a police officer. But even still, she was like, why didn't you say anything? You know, like, why aren't you speaking up? And after she died, like, that just kind of like stayed in my brain. So the last record, it was basically about half the songs are about her and half the songs are about just politics and kind of, they're all kind of political in their own way.
Yeah.
Ever since then, really, I've just like, I don't write about much else, you know, like I write songs for my wife every now and again. Those are stuff that I kind of just play for her and that's it. But like, most of what I'm sort of interested in writing about in terms of like in a more public sense is politics because it's just something that speaks to me and it's just what I feel compelled to write about lyrically. I don't fancy myself a lyricist. So it's just, I start working on something and then a line will come to me and then I'll shape something around it. And it's always just something at least a little bit political.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Can I ask you real quickly about the tuning? What was it?
Oh yes, I don't remember.
Because you
the
made
tune
it up
yourself.
Oh, you didn't. You well, you how are you gonna fucking play it, dude?
Well, I wrote it down. I have it written down somewhere. I just don't know off the top of my head. I'm pretty sure. Like I know it's a half step down, and it's. I'm gonna have to figure it out. I'll figure it out, and then I'll email you and tell you what the tuning is.
Thank you.
But it's just very sort of odd kind of thing. And I use very simple shapes. I wasn't doing any crazy chord shapes, but just the slight dissonance, and it just sort of, that's what really kicks things off for me nowadays when I'm writing. It's just like a little dissonance and an open tuning, just like change. It could be a basic progression, but you know.
So one more thing about that song, you had Vicky Peterson from the Bangles on that song. How cool is that, dude?
She's amazing. She's the best. Like, so our relationship with Vicky goes back about 13 years now. She was in a band with Peter Holsapple in the 90s called the Continental Drifters.
Oh, yeah, I saw them. I saw them.
Did you see them? Really?
I did see them. I saw them at South by Southwest.
Really? At this past one?
No.
Or years ago? Because they just reunited at South by this past
year. Wasn't Susan Cowsill in that band, too?
Yeah,
I totally saw them.
So let me tell you something crazy. So I've been a Drifters fan since I was like 7 or 8 years old, through Hootie, because Peter was playing with Hootie and the Blowfish, and they were like kind of unabashed Drifters fans, and they would they actually covered a Drifters song on one of their records, and Susan like showed up on a Hootie record. Yeah, so through that Hootie connection, and then also through, I was already into the DBs and stuff, like I just kind of discovered the Drifters. And they instantly became like my favorite band, pretty much. And so when we got to know Susan and Peter, I met Susan when I was like 12 or 13 and would send her demos and stuff. And now she's like my second mother.
Wow, dude.
Like truly a mother figure to me, and was actually very close with our mom. But same with Peter, like we're all like kind of family friends. So the Drifters, like, They reunited in 2009, and we asked if we could open for them, and they said yes. So we went down and opened their show in New Orleans, and Vicky, that was the first time we met Vicky, and I guess she really liked us, and so we kind of became friends from there. Then the Bangles took us out a few years later, so we...
You're shitting me. That's awesome, dude.
Yeah, and so the latest thing in this relationship is that, and this is kind of why I asked Vicky to be on the song, but... I went out and saw the Drifters reunite in 2015 with, there's been several lineups of that band that, started in Los Angeles in the early 90s. So all 10 people hadn't been on stage together ever actually in the same room, just because of the different, incarnations of the band. So they did these shows in LA and New Orleans where it was all 10 on stage. So I went and saw the LA shows. And I was sitting there at the time thinking, man, somebody's got to write a book about this band, because they have this crazy story. Like, Peter and Susan were married, they got divorced, they're still in the band together. There's all this sort of like, there's like some Fleetwood Mac stuff, you know, like Susan's husband, Russ, was the drummer in the Drifters, kind of that sort of stuff. And all just this very familial thing, like Vicky married Susan's brother, John Cowsill, so now they're actually family and stuff. So I remember thinking, like, somebody's got to write a book about this band. And I've been like a journalist in my day job and a writer for my whole life, but I didn't think it could be me. And then I was actually out playing with the Cowsills. I was subbing on bass with the Cowsills a few years
later. You're shitting me. You played with the Cowsills?
Yeah. I've done a few runs with them. Yeah. They're amazing, amazing people. And just some of the most fun songs to play bass on.
If I had ever played with the Cowsills, that would literally be the first thing in any bio of mine.
when I will do that sort of stuff, when I'm trying to get, you know, session gigs or whatever, it's pretty up there, I would say. they're amazing. So I was out with them, and the idea popped in my head again of writing a book. And I just went to Susan and Russ, and I was like, what do you guys think about if I wrote a book about the Continental Drifters? And because they know like that the Drifters like just mean everything to me. And they were like, yeah, sure. So I called Peter and he's like, yeah, sure. Called Vicky. Sure. Sounds good. I called everybody in the band. Everybody was cool. And so with a few stops and starts, I have been writing this book about the Continental Drifters.
That's awesome.
Yeah. For about a good like 6-7 months now. I started a few years ago, and then when my daughter was born, I kind of put a pause on it. But for the last like maybe 7 or 8 months, I've been back at it, and I'm hoping to have it out next year. So you were asking about Vicky.
No,
real
quick.
Vicky on the song.
Real quick. Let me ask you. So you say your day job, you write. What are you a freelance writer? Or are you employed at a place? Or are you like?
So my main day job is I'm kind of like, I'm working in social media. So I'm like a social media manager for a nonprofit, but I'm also the co-founding editor of a nonprofit, like local news publication, here in town. And me and my colleagues all came from a newspaper that where I was for about 3 years. And then I was the music editor at this newspaper here for about 3 years. And then there was this management shakeup and a lot of weird, like, kind of very deep right-wing bullshit that kind of went down.
Yeah.
So we all resigned. We resigned at the same time and then started our own thing. So I do that now. So journalism is, yes, and journalism and writing. And I've done all kinds of, like, you know, bullshit freelance writing stuff of all various different types of things. SEO writing and, you know, informational things or whatever. But so I do that kind of that journalism thing as a sort of a bit of a side hustle.
That's amazing, man.
Yeah. It's cool. It's like, it was one of those things that started because I just needed to work and we were touring. And so I just, the stuff that I could do from home was all like freelance writing. So right. I had always been fairly good at it. So I just started doing it when I was like 16, and it's pretty much like every job I've ever had has been in mostly in editorial, but content really.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So you got Vicky to sing on the song. You just said, hey, will you sing on it?
Yeah, because I had been talking to her pretty regularly for the book, and then I just kind of heard her voice on it. And actually, the song was already mixed and was going to go to mastering, but Brendan had mixed this record, so it's all pretty in-house. Everything was in the box, so we could like add things at the very last minute. And we were about like a week away from mastering, and I just asked her if she was able to do something, and she's like, yeah, send it to me. So she sent it. I sent it to her. She had to send something back in like 2 days or something.
Amazing.
And it was amazing. Yeah. We kept all of it. And she's like, you can use whatever you want. And we just kept all of it cause it sounds great. And so she's the best. She's so generous and like just loves music. Amazing guitar player.
It's funny. We have something in common. I work with a few of them, but I have a band and I'm very, very close, friends with Kathy Valentine, who's the bass player from the Go-Go's, who has filled in for Vicky with the Bangles.
Yeah. I met Kathy. Weirdly, I met Kathy at South by Southwest several years ago. She would not remember me, but I was there because she put on like a showcase or something at some venue.
Yeah, the place that she owned called the Townsend.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
So I went to that. I mean, it may have been like 7 or 8 years ago or something.
Yeah.
And Susan
exactly
and Vicky
right.
were doing a duo set there.
Oh, really?
So I had gone to see them. Yeah. And so I met Kathy and, and then I know Vicky also filled in for Charlotte on a Go-Go's tour or something in the 90s, which actually overlaps with my Drifters book. So I'll probably write about that.
That's awesome.
But yeah. Oh, she's amazing. Yeah. She's so, she seems like such a nice person.
She's a great person. Her book is fantastic. If you want to read a great, memoir.
I need to get it. I know it's on my
great.
List for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. It's funny. I used to be very, very, I still am good friends with Jane, but her ex-husband Jed was my manager for a long time. And I ended up writing a lot of songs with Jane and Charlotte. And also like with Kathy and me became friends here, like kind of on our own, but
wow.
Yeah.
It's so weird how all those bands kind of intersect because I know Charlotte's married to Jeff McDonald?
Jeff from Red Cross.
From Red Cross, and I believe like Vicky dated Jeff years ago, Vicky Peterson. And then I think also the one crazy weird little intersection is that the Guild Thunderbird that Jeff has is his like primary guitar these days. I think actually he either bought it from Peter or I know it was Peter's when he was in the DBs, and then it ended up in Jeff's hands. So there's all these bands just sort of like intersect in this crazy way.
Small world, man.
And then actually. And I just discovered recently, and I texted him about it, but I think Stephen McDonald, up until recently, was in that band Off with Keith Morris. And Carlo from the Drifters, Carlo Nucio, was in a band with Keith Morris. And then I think I don't know why I didn't know this, but co-wrote a song on an off record. And I just discovered his name on in the credits when I was listening, because I love hardcore punk and off, one of my favorite bands. And I texted him and was like, what the fuck? You co-wrote a song on an off record? Like, I literally, like, the photo that my wife saw of me on the dating profile where we met, I was wearing an off t-shirt. And I was like, I probably wouldn't have met my wife. I wasn't wearing that t-shirt.
Because she was a fan too?
No, she just, I was just, I happened to be wearing that shirt. Right. And I had blue hair, so she thought I was cool. And she, little did she know at the time, but.
You met her on a dating profile? On a dating site?
Yeah.
What dating site?
OkCupid.
Huh.
And it was my last day. I was going to delete my profile, and it was her first day on that site. And we just happened to like match up or whatever the process was.
Wow.
Just kind of hit it off. And then I went on tour for a month and we texted every single day for a month before we ever met, and then met up and fell in love. And now we have two kids.
Wow.
7 years later. So yeah.
Yeah. Congratulations. Crazy. That's a great story. Hey, speaking of touring, man, you guys don't have any dates on your site. What's the haps on the,
we're working on it. It's so weird because it's already hard enough for us just because of everybody being in different states. Like, Sean Rhodes is in Charleston, South Carolina. I'm in Savannah. Brendan's back in New York where we grew up. And then Josh is in Nashville. So we're kind of everywhere now. And, so that's kind of hard enough trying to figure it out. And then it's just like with the pandemic and stuff, it's like, I feel like there's a lot of things being rescheduled. So like a lot of even smaller clubs, there's just almost no dates available.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Especially now,
out, you know?
Yeah. Especially since this summer of 2022 is like the summer of love again. Like people are just going.
Yeah. So we're working on stuff. It's probably going to be more like fall or something.
Yeah.
But we have every intention because I want to play this stuff out so bad. We actually did, a live session at Dreamland Recording in Hurley, New York, in December. We flew Peter up and stuff, and we had a friend of ours come play extra guitar, but where we just got in a room and just recorded live versions of a few songs.
Awesome.
And it was really fun, and I was like, oh, I want to do this more, you know? And I have an amazing wife who's like, go tour, it's fine, like, you're good. Like, yeah. Okay, great, well, we can figure it out, I will. So,
well, you've toured, I mean, a lot of the world, like you've, how many European tours have you guys done?
Just one so far. Okay. Yeah.
And your song All Signs to Amsterdam. That one's about having a hard time on tour, which was wondering if there was going to be like no tour. I didn't know if you had cut that out of your thing. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. No, I mean, you know, the other thing is like Brendan and I started, with a friend of ours, we actually opened a recording studio that we had here up until the pandemic. And part of the reason we did that was because we've just never, I mean, we like touring, but I've never really been. It's kind of like not my favorite thing in the world. It's more like the what happens between the shows, you know, the traveling and the being cramped in a van and stuff. So we started the studio.
Only fun to be on tour really like for an hour a day.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Other than that, it's like exhausting, yeah. You know,
and boring.
Boring. Yeah. So we started a studio so we could still do music and make records and, you know, not have to be as attached to like the idea of being a touring band all the time. And, so we were still doing it. So in between all that, we went to Europe, with a band called Case Choice, who are friends of ours from Belgium.
Yeah.
And that was, it was a really hard tour. It was weird because I was so excited to be going and doing these theaters, you know, and like playing places like, we played like Paradiso in Amsterdam, which was always a dream of mine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was incredible, but I also have terrible stage fright. And I was deep in anorexia at the time. As a result of just anxiety really. And, so it was just really, it was hard because it was just like exhausted and just like not eat. I was restricting my eating and stuff. And so it was a weird time, you know?
That sucks when you go to a place where the food's so good and you can't really enjoy it. Cause that's one of the best parts about touring is eating.
I know. And we had like catering and stuff and it was all really good, but I couldn't do it. You know, so my mental health was in the shitter at the time. So
do you know, I mean, did you see someone about the stage fright? Like I had a thing. My grandma is kind of on her way out. She's doing a lot better now, but she's 99 years old. She had a UTI. Yeah. It sent this whole thing. And I went to Houston. I was staying with her and I had these gigs I was playing. Luckily they were there in town. But I had one night where I literally like had a full blown panic attack. It wasn't stage fright. It was a combination of, I think, a lot of things. But one of the things was, I think, just the level of anxiety and the getting, like, there's shit I had played a couple nights before that I could not do.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Which was weird. I couldn't remember them. It was fucked up.
I mean, I had so much of that.
What did yours look like is what I was trying to ask.
Like, well, a lot of that happened like when mom was really sick, and it was for years, it was really kind of touch and go. So we would get these opportunities to go to Europe, to go to Israel, to go tour around or whatever. And I would be like, do we really want to leave right now? You know?
Yeah.
And she was like, no, you got to do it. Like, my parents were amazing and they invested money that they did not have to like help us do this thing.
It's amazing.
And so they were like, no, you got to go do this shit. Like, don't stay home because of me. But I would just, it was terrifying being away and like, who knows what could happen when you're not there, you know? And
I think that's what's happening to me. Cause my grandma at that time, like on that weekend, even just going to the gig and being gone for like 5 hours was a lot for me at that point. Maybe that's what it was too.
Oh, I'm sure, because it just contributes to everything. Like this constant, like, you're just so terrified that you're going to like something bad's going to happen while you're gone or you're not there to make memories or any number of things, you know, that's where a lot of it happened for me. It was just that because of what mom was going through. And so it was everything from just like being on stage and just like being really shaky. And the problem with that is with my CP, if I'm shaky, like my legs are shaking, or I kind of freeze up at a microphone, I start to get panicked about, like, if I step away from this microphone, am I going to lose my balance and fall down on stage?
Oh, fuck.
Which I have definitely almost done several times. So like I was taking like beta blockers and stuff, which like I think kind of block some of the physical symptoms of nervousness and anxiety. So I did that on the Europe tour. And to be honest, you know, have a couple of shots or a beer or something beforehand. And probably got a little bit overboard with that on that tour, but I remember even a couple years later, we were out with Indigo Girls. We played the Beacon Theater, which was like a gigantic, like huge life dream.
Yeah.
And I was fucking terrified. And I had, I take Xanax, not regularly, but for when I need it, like especially on airplanes, cause I have terrible fear of flying. And I was just so scared and nervous of playing the Beacon Theater that I was like, I'm going to try like 0.25, you know, whatever, like a half a pill of Xanax to take the edge off. And I wouldn't, and it was great. And I it didn't fog my memory up or anything. I remember that gig vividly and it was wonderful. I wouldn't have gotten through that show. There's no way.
Yeah.
It was paralyzing. Like, there've been so many gigs that have been just fucking paralyzing. And so that song is like really about that and just sort of being a kind of, just mentally just not there anymore. Just like, who cares? You know, like if I don't come home, I don't give a shit kind of thing. Like, and it was so weird because I was really enjoying what I was doing, but just this underneath, it was just, I was just so kind of resigned to just being like, whatever, like I can't bear the anxiety anymore.
Yeah.
And just, you know, and just insecurities of like, you know, just the anorexia and all that kind of stuff, you know, just looking at myself in the mirror and not being happy and what all that stuff. It's just always compounding and kind of made the tour, like, I'll never forget that experience. It was amazing. But like on another level, it was also just like terrible, you know? And I'd never written about it before. And for some reason that song just like made sense for that to be the vehicle for writing about it.
It's a great song, man.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Brendan wrote, that main riff is Brendan. And then I wrote the chorus. So he wrote like the verses and the outro, and I wrote the music to the chorus. So it's very, very collaborative, as is most of this record. I'm really proud of that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, man, that's this whole record. It's better that way. I know if I've said the name of it yet. I will have said it in the intro. Don't worry.
that's okay.
It'll be out July 15th on Empress Records. That's a good label, man. I have a friend from here named Grace Pettis.
Yeah, who, Grace is awesome.
Phenomenal. And that record that she made is so great.
Yeah. It's really, really good. I think Indigo Girls are on that record too, which I was happy to see.
That's right. They are.
Yeah. They're just wonderful. They're just the best. And they're so like generous. So that like, if you like know somebody who knows them and you like, I want Amy on my record, she'd be like, yeah, hell yeah, I'll play on your record. You know, I'm glad she's on it. She's on it. That they're on Grace's record. That's really awesome.
That's wicked. So you've met Grace or you just know?
We actually haven't met, because I believe we probably would have pre-pandemic. Cause I think she got signed.
She got signed right before it happened, and then they let her kind of take the year to figure out how she was going to do this thing. And she, that's what I was going to say, is that I feel like this label, you know, I'm not out here giving them a hand job or anything, but, and God knows I'm, you know, but what I've seen of this label, it seems incredibly accommodating of artists and their lives.
Yes, they're very hands off as far as labels go.
Yeah.
Especially in the creative process, like they just like, they'll be like, hey, you got any updates on stuff? And we're like, not really. Everything's in like kind of disrepair right now. and then they'll just check back in 3 months, you know, and maybe if we have a sketch or two in 3 months, then they'll want to hear something. So they're wonderful. And I think it helps, you know, Rachel Sage is the owner of the label. And
she's an artist herself, on the show too.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
She's awesome. She's great. She's somebody we've known for a long time. And it's just a champion of artists.
Yes.
And that's what labels are supposed to be. And a lot of them aren't really, but Empress really is.
It's one of those things where I feel like they're like the whatever culture, Sub Pop was ripping people off left and right, but to have like that sort of thing where you're like, oh, Sub Pop has a new album, I might check out who that is, like just basically because it all seems very high quality, all seems very cool, everybody's very happy on the label.
Yeah, definitely.
So for shows, you guys are trying to figure out some stuff.
Yeah, I would think like fall or next year or something, we'll probably do some touring. I mean, we need to and we want to.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of figuring it out. I would like to get some support shows or something from somebody. So,
yeah. Do you guys, was Austin a stop on your regular touring routes before?
For South By, for sure. And I don't think we've actually played Austin outside of South By, but I would love to because I love Austin and I literally talk about Austin all the time.
Yeah.
I really want to go back and hang out there. I think Dominic was just there for, I think he just went to like get away for a weekend with his wife, but, he like FaceTimed me and I was like, I'm so jealous now that you're in Austin.
Well, it's like 107 degrees here today. I don't know if you guys are having that, but it's fucking terrible.
It's in the 90s at least. That's terrible. But yeah. I mean, it's what a beautiful city. I miss it a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of great music in Austin.
A lot of great music.
Hey, as you know.
If you guys do come, I totally want to come see you guys and hopefully I won't be playing and I can come see you guys play. I'd love to meet you too. You guys are a phenomenal band and you are just you're an inspirational person just to have like gone through the things that you have and prevailed and really like, you know, I'm a huge fan of Survivors and I'm really impressed with your story and your life.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. It's, you know, just getting through this thing called life or whatever Prince said.
Yeah. But just the thing is like to be an artist and like, you know, you look at somebody like Bowie, you know, you reference him. Here's a guy that like documented his own fucking demise, you know, which is.
Yeah. Which is my favorite Bowie record.
Unbelievable, man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And just to have somebody, you know, you've worked out your life and the things that you've seen around you through music. And I'm just really blown away by your ability to do that and also make great fucking jams.
Thanks so much. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, Sean, it's been great talking to you, man. It really has. This record's great. People get out there and check it out. You can find these guys at afragiletomorrow.com. Read Kathy's book. I'm excited about your book. You think maybe it'll come out next year?
I think so. That's definitely in the plans. I'm working away. It's like a part-time job for me right now.
Yeah.
I'm always talking to people. So,
well, when you do write it, man, come on the show and like, you know, promote it.
Maybe we can bring a couple Drifters on or something too. That'd be fun.
Killer,
to get a whole group of us. I would love that. Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, I'm gonna write your publicist. She wanted me to let her know how it went. And part of me does always want to write back and go like, he didn't even talk. What a jerk. No, but you're a great guest. And it's been a real honor getting to talk to you, man.
Thanks, Johnny. Same. Yeah. It's been a total pleasure.
Yeah. Stay in touch, man.
Yeah, we'll do. Lips could see the fingertips tremble as they
play. Gang, that was Sean Kelly from the band A Fragile Tomorrow. Their album, It's Better That Way, drops next week, July 15th on Empress Records. Go to afragiletomorrow.com for all of your Fragile Tomorrow needs. What a great conversation. I really enjoy getting to know Sean Kelly. I hope we get to meet in person sometime and get to hang out. I love their music, and I thought he was a fantastic dude. All right? So, hey, gang, don't forget when you're out there checking out afragiletomorrow.com. Subscribe to this podcast wherever it is you're listening to podcasts, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher. Subscribe, follow, and rate. Please let us know how we're doing. Also, share the show. We're How Did I Get Here on Facebook, and I am at Johnny Gowdy on Instagram and Twitter. All right, have a great weekend, whatever it is you're doing. G-Love's coming up on the show on Tuesday. G-Love, baby. G-Love and Special Sauce. Have a great weekend, whatever it is you're doing. Enjoy this song. All Signs to Amsterdam from the band A Fragile Tomorrow from their upcoming record, It's Better That Way, dropping next week, July 15th on Empress Records. Have a great weekend, gang. Mwah. Let's get down. Make it out of the sea, like this body on fire. To be, to lift air above.